Hello, this is Sam Lott. I'm talking today on what the future holds for automated roadway vehicles, and in particular, how we can evaluate the mobility benefits, the infrastructure gaps, and the transit applications. First, my thanks to HGAC for the invitation to speak at their January 22, 2018 Brown Bag Lunchtime Lecture Series. And this one-hour audio track has been prepared on the same topic to accompany a PDF version of the slide deck. For those who attended the January 22nd Brown Bag, you'll see that I have added a handful of slides to better conclude some points and transitions of new topics. And as noted on this introductory slide, I have formed a new company in recent months called Automated Mobility Services, LLC. Although I'm continuing my affiliation and active involvement with TSU Center for Transportation Training and Research. Slide number two has contact information for both HGAC and myself if you need to communicate about this talk. Let me note that I will often use expressions like next or the following slide to help the listener keep up with my narrative. And occasionally I will refer to the slide number that's found in the upper right of each slide. The approach I will follow in this audio track is to touch lightly on some of the very technical topics, assuming that either the listener is knowledgeable in these things or that anyone who is new to the field can pause the audio, can review the slides in more detail, and then continue. In general, I will not address all of the material on each slide in order to keep the presentation moving along. A snapshot of my professional experience is shown in slides 3, 4, and 5. I have worked in the field of transportation throughout my career, and this work has spanned planning, engineering, design, and implementation projects. Throughout this career, I have been involved with advanced automated technologies, and most recently, in my affiliation with the Center for Transportation Training and Research at TSU, I've led a TRB study that is highlighted on slide 5. The study on which I was the designated principal investigator was actually performed under the National Cooperative Highway Research Program. Interestingly enough, it dealt specifically with the deployment of automated roadway vehicle technology in transit operations. Note that the internet link to access the online information of this TRB project can be found on the very last slide of the document, with links provided for both the website for the project, which has downloads for extensive working papers there, as well as a link to the TRB webinar recording that was held last November. As shown in slide 6, which is titled The Main Presentation Content, I will first give an introduction addressing the context of what our future transportation conditions will be here in the Houston region. Then I'll get into the main topic of how automated and connected roadway vehicle technology will benefit Houston and the related infrastructure gaps and opportunities for transit applications. The more technical side of the talk will begin with a primer on the state of the automation technology and the timelines for its readiness for various applications. And I would note that the time markings of this audio track are shown on slide 6. For the various sections of the presentation, as well as the section title slide numbers. And this will facilitate the listener either skipping portions of the audio track in order to reach topics that are of greater interest to you, or listening to the full talk, which is approximately 1 hour long, and breaking it into maybe several shorter listening sessions. But before I begin, allow me to give my disclaimer on what I do and don't know about the field of automation. I do have opinions, though, and I'll share that. On slide 7, it identifies other areas of advancing automation in transportation systems, which I will not be addressing in this presentation today. In the field of automated guideway systems, I do know a lot about that field, but it's a topic for a different lecture on another day. There are certainly major advances being continuously made in the marine and the aviation fields. However, I'm not qualified to address these, and I'll leave those discussions to others. I do believe that these other automation technologies will not in themselves resolve the challenges we will face here in Houston in the decades to come. And what I mean is that there's no silver bullet. And at the end of my talk, I will discuss a multimodal approach to our future. So as an introduction, I want to initially clarify that what I have learned about Houston's future from my past studies in the last few decades, I want to share that with you, and then I'll be able to address the topic of automated roadway vehicle technology in that context. Many of you may have seen slide number 9, which is taken from my presentation that I have given for a number of years titled Houston's Impending Transportation Crisis. The question is, will automated vehicles avert this crisis? And if so, is the end maybe not so near after all? Well, I believe that the answer is still the end is near. We will face massive congestion in the next few decades, as I noted on slide 10. And the reason is because Houston will be doubling in population by 2050. That fact alone cannot be ignored when considering advanced transportation technology applications and their associated benefits. In 2012, I was involved in a regional-scale operational analysis of our region's roadway system under what was at the time the forecasted travel demand conditions representing 2035. Slide 11 has images drawn from that study in which the red color represents level of service F congestion that's cascading through the network back upstream from the points of capacity overload. This is using the HGAC's validated demand model to generate this operational scenario. These graphics show the morning hours, and the next few slides show other subsequent hours, and that clearly, our freeway and tollway system will be experiencing level service F congestion throughout the day. Most importantly for our discussion of automated vehicle technology, under these operating conditions with massive congestion, even the HOV and managed lane facilities will be operationally impacted as congestion cascades back, queuing into these facilities. So my point on slides 11, 12, and 13 is that even when some of the newly defined roadway projects and the other refinements of the regional travel demand models that are continuously being accomplished and may not have been represented in this 2035 scenario, even when those are accomplished, I can say with certainty that the operating conditions of our roadways over the next 30 years will include congestion unlike anything Houston has ever seen before. But you may ask, the information, how will that change with automated vehicle technology? Well, actually, on slide 14, it explains that even with very extensive penetration of the operating vehicles with automation technology, the congestion will still be massive throughout the day. The operational analysis we performed of the 2035 scenario had already assumed significant advantages for connected and automated vehicles. We assign much higher average lane capacity and much denser vehicle stacking within the congestion queues than is possible today with human drivers. Slide 15 describes the new aspects of demand and operational analysis that we are beginning to understand will be needed in our travel demand and operational planning studies from this point going forward. The good news is that in addition to roadway capacities going up, automated vehicles are expected to foster sharing of vehicles and sharing of rides, as noted on the slide, which many analysts believe will help reduce the overall vehicle travel demands. But the last bullet on the slide is the most important, since current methodology does not load empty vehicle movements through the system as part of the travel demand analysis. And we'll be discussing those empty vehicle movements quite a lot later in the talk. The transportation planning industry is currently struggling to understand what the future holds for us with the advent of automated vehicle technology. One view that gets a lot of press is on the slide that has the bold title. It's called the Utopian View, in which in concept vehicle trips steadily decline even while roadway capacities increase. This generally assumes a large component of shared ride services by fully automated taxis and Uber-like vehicles, automated vehicles. The result is often imagined that we can turn almost all of the parking lots into public parks, since vehicles will just drop their occupants off and then leave. But the next slide, in contrast, describes what's called the dystopian view, in that overall traffic congestion will become much worse as people are being chauffeured to and from work by their personal AV, and then they send the empty vehicle home for the day until it returns to pick them up at the end of the day. No one knows whether technology will swing the needle more towards the utopian future or towards the dystopian future. But one thing that can be said, as Houston grows to twice its current size, it will worsen the probable outcomes of our impending crisis, massive congestion I've described, and that's still a conclusion I have to come back to as the operating conditions that automated vehicle technology will face here in Houston. Transitioning to the topic of the day, let me first provide a high-level overview of automated and connected roadway vehicle technology. Slide 19 has some definition of terms and acronyms. The most important acronym I will use is AV, to mean automated roadway vehicle. And then kind of at the bottom of the slide is kind of a tongue-in-cheek comment that the definition of autonomous depends on who you ask. I'll allude to a range of high automation that we can call autonomous throughout the presentation, but it should mean that a vehicle is able to do anything that a human can do. And I'll refer to that more later. One thing is for certain, our world of transportation will change dramatically over the next 30 years. I realize that this is going to be true when about 5 years ago I saw that the major Detroit car manufacturers were all opening offices in Silicon Valley, and they were joining the race for bringing automated vehicles to the marketplace with the Googles of the world. Of course, trucking industry is very active in this research as well. As shown on slide 21, Peloton's website refers to their cloud-based network operation center. This is an important aspect of fleet operations that we will be discussing as the talk goes on. And then, of course, transit. On the next slide is the field of application that is developing quickly. Slide 22 has a few of these vehicle technologies which are major players in the field. Let me say at this point that Houston Metro is in very good position for deploying automated bus operations, like the one shown here with the Mercedes bus moving along a dedicated busway on the left. Metro's major investments in building the AirTel V lanes will bring tremendous benefits with the early application of automation technology and transit service as they're deployed on those facilities. Now, slide 23 illustrates the parallel development path that's underway within the industry. Automotive work in automation is one branch of the research, the automated driving systems, and the field of equipment to accomplish the connected vehicle communications is a separate branch of the research. I'll explain each of these, what these entail, in the following slides. So slide 24 illustrates how the planned connected vehicle technology that the U.S. Department of Transportation has been leading are intended to achieve the key safety, mobility, and environmental goals. The research and development of connected vehicle technology has been going on for over a decade, and it has been supported by the Detroit original equipment manufacturers, OEM, I may use that acronym. The car manufacturers themselves have been involved with DOT. Slide 25 describes that work. V2V stands for vehicle to vehicle, and V2I stands for vehicle to infrastructure. And there is reference to DSRC, which is digital short-range communications. So far, this is the main technology that USDOT is banking on for vehicle connectivity. And the Detroit car manufacturers are working closely to incorporate compatible communication systems in their developing vehicle designs. DSRC roadside equipment is a form of ITS technology, but with the vehicle able to receive radio messages and then respond to those messages, such as an alert that there's a sudden stopping condition coming up or signal timing information to adjust the vehicle performance. Slide 26 shows one other type of DSRC communications equipment, vehicle to infrastructure, that is being actively developed. It's called SPAT, signal phase and timing equipment. It's sending real-time traffic signal phase and timing data from the roadside equipment cabinets to the vehicles in the area, which are able to receive that through having onboard receivers. And the acronym V2I for vehicle to infrastructure communications is indicative of this class of technology. So slide 27 poses the question, what's the difference between connected and automated technology? Well, connected sends warnings to the vehicles, whereas the automated driving systems are monitoring their own surroundings within their own with their own sensor systems, and they're taking actions to conduct the driving tasks. Almost everyone believes that the combination of these two technologies, connected vehicles and automated vehicles, is the best approach for the future world that we're wanting to see. But the Department of Transportation has not yet given their final directive on the technology that the industry must use. It's not been mandated yet what that technology will be, although it's expected soon, for vehicle-to-vehicle and vehicle-to-infrastructure communications. Slide 28 actually shows a comparison of the competing, what you might say, competing technologies that are being debated for this vehicle-to-infrastructure communications. DSRC is very robust. It's relatively secure. Whereas 5G wireless communications, which is challenging technology, is probably less expensive overall because it can be deployed on a very large scale, but it may be more susceptible to cybersecurity issues. So a lot of ground still needs to be covered in the connected vehicle side of the equation. As part of my talk on the AV technology in terms of this being an overview or a primer, I'm now going to dig in a little bit more into the technical definitions being developed to guide the automated vehicle design of driving systems. Slide 29 and the 10 slides that follow that or so will show important aspects of automated driving systems and the levels of automation that the industry is using to describe the basic functionality, as well as the areas of concurrence that the U.S. Department of Transportation is stating in their policy announcements. The quotes that are there are actually drawn from a Society of Automotive Engineers newsletter about an announcement from the USDOT. They describe how the role of the federal government, and specifically the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, NHTSA, is important because they're calling the shots on what the car manufacturers must do to keep their vehicles safe. Similarly, the Society of Automotive Engineers, SAE, is creating the standards for safe design and basic functionality of automated vehicles. And these are industry consensus standards, and they are a window into where the roadway vehicle technology is headed. Therefore, let's look a little bit at these standards. Slide 30 identifies the driving automation levels, that the levels of 3, 4, and 5 are what is of greatest interest in this talk and to the government. It's actually due, the standard J3016 is actually due for an update to be released any day, is my understanding. But the information on the following slides, I don't expect to be changed by that new update. For example, the next slide, 31, describes the dynamic driving task as the operational and tactical driving functions, but not the strategic driving functions. There's a little more clarity that was added in a webinar that I attended recently by SAE, where the leaders of this standards group indicated that tactical functions for the dynamic driving task will be defined as actions to be taken within the following 10 seconds. That means that all of the attention that the Society of Automotive Engineer levels of automation are dealing only with the immediate actions a vehicle must take in the next 10 seconds. And they're not addressing all of the other decisions, such as the strategic decisions of if this vehicle is going to exit in 2 miles, which lane should the vehicle be maneuvering to in the next 90 seconds to be ready to exit. That's a strategic decision. Now, similar to the operational design domain, the ODD, as it's defined, identifies what limits the automated driving functions are designed to address. These are boundaries. They may be geographic boundaries, sometimes called geofencing. There may be certain classifications of roadways that can be navigated, like freeways and arterials. And they may be environmental conditions in which the automated driving system is allowed to continue. If a vehicle passes outside the boundaries of any of these parameters in the operational design domain, then it must leave its fully automated operating state. That's very important, and we'll talk about that more in what are the implications for our systems in urban districts. Slide 32 talks about the essential nature of automated driving that's tied to this an extensive array of sensory equipment that is will be on board each vehicle. This is very sophisticated equipment, and it all has to work together to reach the highest levels of automated driving systems. The challenges that current R&D efforts are addressing start with managing the synthesizing of these camera and sensor equipment signals, such as the next slide 33 describes. It then must take that tremendous flow of integrated data and make decisions about the dynamic driving tasks using very sophisticated artificial intelligence and other supplementary systems and data processing. So this slide discusses the really difficult parts of automated vehicle technology. And we're going to be watching and discussing many of these aspects throughout the years to come. All of that explanation sets up the information that's shown now on slide 34. The SAE standards that are being used by the automotive industry clearly state that when any condition occurs, whether it's a system failure, some type of conflict between all the signals that are being processed, or that the artificial intelligence decision criteria is not aligning properly, or that the vehicle is passing outside of the operational design domain, those boundaries I talked about, then the vehicle will revert to what's called a fallback condition, where it has established a minimum risk for that vehicle. I will note that in my work in automated systems, the safest state for any automated system is to simply stop operation. So the state of automation in the foreseeable future then falls back to what's in the next slide there. We will rely heavily, and these are definitions from within the standard, we will rely heavily on remote monitoring of automated vehicles from operations control centers and from standby operators that are either on board or nearby the vehicle. So this discussion on slide 35, the terms clearly indicate that the early industry trends are moving towards what you might call fleet operations, where the vehicles are being operated by a fleet operator and they have operations control centers monitoring everything that's happening. I think that's why business coalitions are forming rapidly between the transit network companies like Lyft, the automobile manufacturers, and the rental car companies because of this trend towards fleet operations in the relatively near early phases of automated vehicle technology. So with this background that I've described on the state of automated vehicle technology or AV technology, let me step through an overview of the development timeline for first the general automotive applications, after which I will address the timelines for transit and freight trucking applications. Slide 37 shows the past milestones that policy statements and technology definition standards have been released by NHTSA and Society of Automotive Engineers. The policy statements made by NHTSA in September, this last September 2017, aligned much better, much more closely with the industry standard terminology than the previous policy statements. And as I mentioned, the SAE standard J3016 that provides taxonomy and definitions is actually due to be updated any day now. Taxonomy, by the way, means the classification into ordered categories, thus the levels of driving. So let's talk about that. Slide 38 describes what will be affecting the timelines by the definition of what exists today versus what is coming. Level 0 through 2 of the automated driving technology levels that are defined by the Society of Automotive Engineers are actually operating on the road today. Most, if not all, of the high-end models for essentially all of the major car manufacturers have level 1 and level 2 functions available today. Note that these levels will be referred to as L2, L4, and so forth from this point forward in the presentation. The following set of slides, starting with slide 39, show that the highest levels of level 3 to level 5 are now officially defined as automated driving systems, or ADS. L3 is what NHTSA has labeled conditional automation, as it shows on the next slide, and that requires a suitable operator to be ready and available to perform the driving tasks when necessary. Level 4, then, on the following slide after that, is called high automation by NHTSA, and it's a state of automated driving that does not require a person to be in the vehicle at all for it to operate. However, if that vehicle passes outside of the operational design domain, then an operator must take control. And that's where the remote operator prospect comes in, unless the vehicle stops until someone comes. Note that the term level 4 is also generally applied often to a broad set of functions when people are talking about it that do not just specifically include the tactical, this is the critical 10-second decisions for the dynamic driving tasks. But that use of that term is technically only correct when you're referring to the tactical decisions of the automated driving system. So there's an area of caution here. When people are interpreting what is meant when a vehicle manufacturer states that their vehicle is capable of L4 operations, you must realize that that manufacturer is using the SAE designation to refer specifically and only to the tactical dynamic driving tasks, those things that have to happen within the next 10 seconds. And then finally, slide 42 defines what NHTSA calls full automation, and this complies with the SAE L5, level 5. That's the ultimate level of automated tactical driving functions in which no operator is required. And this primarily refers to capabilities where the vehicle will not have significant geofencing limits. It can maybe travel across Texas or to specific, it can go to almost any classification of roadways. And that will be the highest order, or level 5. There's also the connotation with full automation that the vehicle will be able to make strategic decisions in wayfinding and so forth. When we reach that point, I think vehicles really will have earned the label of being autonomous. So based on these definitions, the next slide shows the expected timeline on which the various levels of automated driving will be available for our everyday use. We will begin to see L4 operations, where automobiles that we can buy completely drive themselves on our freeways and within managed lanes, I think within the next 5 to 10 years. And then L4 operations will be seen in low-speed mixed traffic on our high-activity city streets, probably by the 2030-2035 time frame. This is the time frame where the overall traffic operating conditions will become begin to become more tenuous as empty vehicles are continuously moving along our roadways. We'll talk more about empty vehicles later, but that's an important point, as I alluded to earlier, talking about the congestion we will face. Now to switch to the timeline considerations for automated roadway vehicles in transit applications, starting with slide 44 and the following, we will see automation technology for transit applications very soon, because they've actually been under development for decades. In fact, Houston Metro was involved in bus platooning tests like those that are shown on page 45 or slide 45 in the 1990s. And this openness to advanced technology will really benefit Metro's ability to move forward aggressively, because they've invested in such an excellent HOV system. Internationally, the Japanese have been very active for over a decade, and the example shown on slide 46 is from a transportation expo that was held in 2005. And this Toyota bus technology that was demonstrated there carried over 2 million people during that six-month exhibition 13 years ago. And now the marketplace opportunities are starting to bring out of Europe and the U.S. brand new players into the game, who are mixing in with companies that have been operating automated vehicles for a long time, such as those shown on slide 47. Now let me come back to that study that we did in the next slide. Part of the constraints to advancing the deployment timeline that were addressed in that study, here on slide 48, it illustrates the areas of change that must be addressed to bring this transit automated vehicle transit technology into common use. These changes in policies and laws and regulations will take time, and this may actually pace the deployment of automated vehicles to a broad transit use, probably more than the technology readiness itself. And as an example, safety assurance is one of the most important transformations that the overall transit industry will have to embrace, even the smallest of bus operators who intend to apply automated vehicle technology will have to comply with FTA criteria for safe design and operations through a rigorous safety management system program that right now only advanced rail operators have to comply with. With regard to transit applications in general, I want to emphasize that fully automated transit systems will need much more than just L4 automated driving systems that are as those defined by SAE standards. Slide 49 lists some of these other systems and facilities and components that will be necessary. Of these, I am continually emphasizing within the industry that the ability of the vehicles to perform precision docking at station platforms is essential for safety and for efficient operations that will fully comply with ADA regulations. I can't go into the details now for the sake of time, but I will refer to aspects of these additional automated features in some ways in the following slides. And I will note that there are a number of different presentations that I have and could give on these detailed topics, but they really can't be addressed now, just within the hour that we've got. Slide 50 was actually, in the January 22nd presentation, was actually a video of a system which has been in continuous operation since 1999 near Rotterdam in the Netherlands. Aspects of its control system, with it being almost 20 years old, they're fairly simple. Since it was accomplished before the maturation of our modern satellite-based GPS technology. However, that simple control system has proven highly reliable, and it remains to be very interesting to see how it's going to be applied in AV transit applications, especially when you blend that control system with the new sensors and other technologies that are now in development. The next slide lists more completely the additional functional requirements and some of the associated benefits of deploying AV technology in transit use. As noted on the slide, a specific new transit definition is needed of the operational design domain that goes beyond the basic SAE definitions that we discussed previously for tactical dynamic driving tasks. In the end, I think it's the field of transit where this full realm of subsystem technologies, operational support systems, personnel, assignments, fleet operations, all of that can be best addressed in the transit world, in my opinion. As AV transit technology matures and fleets of small vehicles start to operate with much more complex routing and dispatching, the services and convenience of transit use overall will be dramatically better as customized travel arrangements can be provided for each travel party. And that can be done in real time. The timeline shown on slide 52 for transit applications has similarities to that discussed previously for automotive applications. But note that in the near term, L4 operations will be ready in the next 5 to 10 years within campus environments for transit operations. And that will be in common use. Actually, Houston is well positioned to deploy L4 automation very early on the timeline as well along our 120-mile HOV lane system. We'll be early adopters in the midterm of this timeline. Later I'll talk about a proposed testing of L4 transit that's being planned for here in Houston. And then to be complete, there's a couple of slides where I'll speak to the automation that's coming in the trucking industry, the freight haul applications. Slide 54 describes some of the milestones that will be paced by the changing regulations and laws to allow deployment. In fact, this slide notes that current law states that a trained commercial driver must be behind the wheel of semi-trucks at all times, and then it says, the law says, regardless of any automated driving technologies. Therefore, it's going to take a while for the lawmakers to be comfortable to change laws like this and regulations to allow deployment. The timeline shown on the next slide reflects this reality, and I think the fact that the vehicles we're talking about in truck haul, freight haul operations are so large and heavy, it makes sense that there's going to be a little bit more carefully paced timeline. Now moving into the next section, the benefits and challenges, the issues, the gaps that I'll discuss will focus on urban districts. However, many of these benefits and issues have similar considerations for all other contexts of roadway systems, whether they be freeways or tollways, HOV lanes, managed lanes, and arterial street systems. But in the allotted hour of time that I have, I do not have time for a comprehensive discussion of AV operations in all types of roadways. Therefore, I'm going to concentrate on urban districts, since I believe they have the most relevance to Houston's near-term objectives to deploy AV technology. The benefits of technology applications within urban districts that are summarized on slide 57 are substantial. In order to make them easier to understand, let me start with some illustrations of mobility on demand transit service, which are drawing from some of my past work in operational studies of advanced technology. Slide 58 shows a representation of a transit network system that was studied for Cal State Fresno on the campus, a project I did about 10 years ago. It was purely conceptual. The automated transit network applications has been a goal of transit professionals for many years, even as a term, the ATN, Automated Transit Network. They've only been analyzed in concept, though, because it's only through these operational studies as a result that we have insight into how they would work, and that they're insight into mobility on-demand services, and that's the point. The network configuration shown was for an elevated transitway. It connected many stations throughout the main campus. It connected to perimeter parking, sports facilities, and an adjacent mixed-use community. So it's a good conceptual representation of what a future automated roadway transit system, with whether it's automated taxis or transit vehicles or Uber-like services, how they would be operated within a major urban district. The simulation modeling that was used to analyze the automated network operations studied many small transit vehicles that were being dispatched in real time, and they were providing direct rides between offline stations from origin station to destination. The people were able to travel with no stops between where they got on and where they got off. Slide 59 discusses some of that. It was shared ride services that was modeled for these small four-passenger vehicles. And the on-demand dispatching resulted in periods of time where vehicles were basically dormant. Most students were in class. There wasn't much going on, so the vehicles were at rest, followed by periods where there was a class change, and almost every vehicle was in service. The animated video that I showed in the January 22nd presentation is graphically illustrated by a couple of screenshots there on slide 60. And I've used a circle to focus you on what was of interest. You'll note that each of the vehicles has a colored halo around its position, and the operational issue that I was focusing on is clearly shown where there's a particular station with very high demand conditions that does not have the capacity to accommodate the vehicle throughput sufficiently. The result is that the vehicles that were bound for other destinations and would have bypassed the station with the issue, out on the main line, they were being stopped in the same congestion with the vehicles that were trying to get to that overloaded station. So this illustrates operating conditions where vehicle queuing back from stations that are overloaded can extend upstream and into the network and disturb the overall efficiency of the network operations. From these types of studies, conceptually, we've learned that when trip patterns are spread evenly throughout the network, then everything works very well. But when large concentrations of trip patterns are focused in only a few stations, especially when that's combined with surge flow trip patterns, then operational problems have to be addressed at the station level, providing adequate capacities for throughput of vehicles. A different example was also shown in that January 22nd presentation with another video clip that came from a simulation-based study of a hypothetical high-speed rail intermodal station. Slide 61 shows this model. The analysis was actually performed as part of a TxDOT high-speed rail ridership study, and this was a conceptual intermodal rail station for Houston. At this point on the stop action that's captured on this slide, it was very early in the simulation day, and the passengers arriving on commuter rail trains are only just beginning to trickle into the station. So the curb fronts out in front on the left are fairly dormant, and the transit station on the right, there's very little activity going on. That's on slide 61. Then if you look at slide 62, another time slice from that video, 7 minutes later, there's a surge of passengers coming from the commuter rail platforms. Trains have arrived, and they're passing into the station to reach their connection, intermodal connection. And look at the roadway conditions. The roadway operations through the curb front are suddenly extremely congested as people arriving at the curb front have sent notice to their automated Uber vehicle that's being dispatched to pick them up, and there's this huge logjam of vehicles. In comparison, an even larger number of people are arriving over at the AV transit station on the right, And in this image, they're accessing these vehicles to reach specific destinations in the adjacent urban district. These two different types of facility accommodations for private fleet operators at the curb front and public AV transit operators at the station, they have very different impacts on the surrounding roadway system. The curb front operations can be very problematic. And a final point is made on slide 63. These demand services, on-demand services that happen in our large urban districts, they'll be very beneficially affected when they're connected to high-capacity transit facilities like this hypothetical rail station, and the vehicles are moving people to and from the station into the urban district. This is called first-mile, last-mile application, and AV technology will make a very effective contribution to the way high-capacity transit is used. I'll come back to that in my final statements about Houston's multimodal future. So these illustrations from my past analytical studies of operating conditions for demand response type technologies, small vehicles, they demonstrate that there's substantial benefits that can result from AV technology applications in urban districts. Here on slide 64, I've listed key summary benefits for urban districts. Most important may be the personal convenience of being transported with services that are customized for each person's specific need, such as traveling directly to your destination without stops and being let out of the vehicle close to your destination. When you combine that with mobility on demand, the use of small shared ride vehicles that are dispatched in real time creates a very efficient means of circulation within urban districts. And in addition, AV applications connecting urban centers with easy access to high-capacity transit corridors, that creates an overall beneficial impact for the region by increasing the usefulness and the patronage of public transit. With these benefits, though, comes major additional benefits of an environmentally sustainable future. But there are corresponding negative impacts of AV transit and AV vehicle use, private fleet operators, that we're going to only beginning to understand and analyze. And these are going to need appropriate planning and design attention. So in the next set of slides, let me address these issues in terms of the operational implications and the associated infrastructure gaps that we must fill to provide suitable curb front provisions, proper accommodations for empty vehicles, and anticipating the impacts when vehicles fail, failures of the automated driving system. Those are listed there on the slide. The next slide, let me start with considerations of the curb front considerations, slide 66. Within the urban street right-of-way, it will be necessary to accommodate either curb front drop-off and pickup operations or space for failed vehicles to stop. And I would note that the current momentum in designing complete streets, such as the concept that's shown there on slide 66, it's going to have to be adjusted for these future needs of automated vehicles. Street parking in particular may be significantly impacted in areas where a lane has to be kept open to address these issues of AV operations. So on that topic of curb front provisions, the next slide breaks down some of these design challenges we'll face with respect to city streets. The question of providing dedicated drop-off and pick-up curb front facilities, much like you see at airports, we have to have an answer in how to accommodate both private automated vehicles as well as transit network companies like automated Uber or Lyft or automated taxis. Equally important will be provisions for public transit AV operations. especially when we're running many more small vehicles providing on-demand services to transit users. And those may be accommodated also at the street, on the curbs, or maybe in dedicated transit station facilities. But the right-of-way implications of all of these public and private service and the operational considerations, we need to initiate strategic planning studies and make specific provisions within the street designs as soon as possible, because this problem is going to be on top of us. Slide 68 is a similar set of questions concerning empty vehicle management that are essential to address in planning and design studies. The facilities necessary for new parking or staging facilities, which accommodate empty vehicles that are in standby mode until they're dispatched to pick up their next passenger. That could involve automated garages in proximity to the urban district. It could involve holding lots for transit and fleet vehicles like you see for taxis at the airports. However, the reality is that many empty AVs may well be programmed to circulate through the streets, to stay active, stay moving until the next dispatch, or to stop and dwell along vacant curbs. They could even be programmed to go to areas that are designated for free parking. You'll see on the slide there I'm interested in the term AV vagrancy, where vehicles are hanging out in unexpected places. In this vein, one of the most negative outcomes with regard to the regional impact could be privately owned vehicles that are empty. You might call them no occupant vehicles that are traveling long distances through the regional roadway system when they're being sent all the way home by the owner until they're dispatched back to return and pick up the owner. This is one of the key issues that's anticipated in that dystopian view that I mentioned earlier. And then slide 69 addresses the implications of AV driving systems where failures are involved, and the vehicle has to revert to that fallback condition I talked about. There are operating conditions as well that might not be technically failures, but where the vehicle is simply passed out of the vehicle's intended operational design domain that's defined by the SAE standard. The matter of AV operations where shutting down when the vehicle faces an environment that's outside its operational domain is not trivial. Think about Houston, where the climate can cause dramatic changes to weather in very short periods of time. And if there's a number of vehicles in the operations on the streets that have operational design domains that do not accommodate a sudden downpour of 1 or 2 inches an hour rainfall, those vehicles have to stop or revert to a fallback. Even simple roadway construction activity and lane closures can have a significant effect on where the vehicle, what it's able to understand what to do, or whether it has to revert to a fallback condition. So the next section will talk about these infrastructure challenges and how those are affected by these operational implications we've been talking about, the challenges. Here in slide 71, the term infrastructure is broadly defined. It encompasses everything from paint on the roads to publicly owned and maintained equipment on the roadside, ITS type equipment, to even physical right-of-way. This is a very broad topic, infrastructure, that can only be dealt with in this presentation with a few points for discussion, and we'll have to go to other talks another time to address all aspects of infrastructure. Some aspects relate specifically to the automated vehicle technology itself, and I will address those. Then right-of-way aspects of infrastructure, I'll note those briefly, complete discussion. And the last item that's on the list here on slide 71, electric vehicle provisions. I think that's important, but there's no way that I can address that today. I've given it in other talks. And I'll have to address that at another time. Three areas of AV technology related to infrastructure provisions are shown on slide 72. Machine vision systems, connected vehicle communications, and what is called AV localization. That's where the vehicle is determining the best it can what its precise location is within the roadway system. And of these three technology issues, today I'm going to specifically address machine vision. Slide 73 identifies several factors and challenges that video-based vision systems must see and interpret properly in order for the vehicle to proceed along its travel path. This involves paint striping, signage, traffic signals, construction, maintenance of traffic, cones. These items involve infrastructure investments for capital improvements and maintenance expenses that have to be performed if we're going to introduce level 4 operations. And the following photographs illustrate these types of problems that a machine vision system would see. The next slide is a photograph I took from my car while I was traveling along a Houston road very soon after it rained. Machine vision systems will not be able to see or properly interpret where the lanes are, as I couldn't see. And in that case, the AV will revert to a fallback condition if a specific travel lane is not able to be determined. Better paint striping or other means of marking lanes may be need to be installed for this to be resolved. A significant expense. Another photo shown on slide 75 is one which could cause major safety issues. In the poor light and the obstructed view of the stop sign that's directly ahead in this photograph, it's entirely possible that the machine vision system would never see the stop sign. And the next slide after that, 76, shows a closer view of the same stop sign, which is being blocked from view by a utility pole, and that potentially will prevent it from being able to be distinguished, particularly in the dim light that's available. And if an AV does not see a stop sign, it could proceed into the intersection unexpectedly, potentially causing an accident. Slide 77 shows another signage problem that could confuse or even mask a stop sign, even in good lighting conditions where there's other signs in the way. These problems can be fixed, but they could involve substantial expense making the corrections. And finally, the next slide, 78, has a photo I took when driving through a freeway construction zone with other traffic moving along at about 60 miles an hour. The maintenance of traffic plan did not include temporary striping, and so this dual lane traffic operations at freeway speeds was placing an operating lane where the vehicle straddles the normal lane markings, and then the second lane, the vehicle's moving into the shoulder lane. This condition would probably be very confusing to an AV, and it could prevent it from continuing under L4 automation. When artificial intelligence is unable to determine what it should do, it will revert to a fallback condition. And in moving into this fallback condition, if a receptive human operator does not assume control within a short period of time, the vehicle will bring itself to a stop. In this presentation, I can't really drill down more into other infrastructure gaps, although on slide 79, the V2I communications infrastructure is listed, along with localization equipment that would supplement satellite-based GPS, which are characteristically weak signals. These infrastructure solutions are still in R&D, and when the designs are fully resolved, then funding for these major investments will need to be made in order for equipment installation to occur effectively over time. One of the most important areas of infrastructure gaps has to do with physical infrastructure in the form of expanded right-of-way that may be necessary to address operational issues that I've talked about, those of curb front provisions or empty vehicle accommodations, and failed vehicle mitigation. If additional right-of-way is required across all types of roadways, as discussed on slide 80, this infrastructure gap could be one of the most difficult nuts to crack in bringing AV technology operation. Next, I'm going to go for this last section into a discussion of a project that's planned here in Houston called the Houston University District. This is a project on slide 81. It's introduced, and the agencies that are listed there are the ones that are active in the discussions to bring this project into fruition. The next slide shows how the genesis of the project came out of the findings of our NCHRP study, which identified the characteristics that would be important for a proper test bed. And the university district project is intended to meet this basic criteria for studying safety, policy, regulatory issues such as ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, as well as providing an initial experience with AV operations. Slide 83 shows the plan for the initial phases of deployment, starting with operations along the pedestrian facility called Tiger Walk, which runs through the center of TSU campus. And then the scale of the AV transit circulator operations, often they're called shuttle systems in the industry vernacular, will then extend from Tiger Walk to operate in more complicated environments that have vehicle operations even in mixed flow traffic. And the objective of the early deployment will be to reach the light rail station that's located at the edge of the University of Houston campus at Scott Street. The next slide shows the ultimate deployment, where its service is extended throughout the whole university district. There's actually three campuses, because U of H has a second campus for the Energy Research Center. You can see that also in a later phase, we will extend the system to the north to reach the Metro Eastwood Transit Center. And this will provide a very important first mile, last mile connection to the I-45 high capacity HOV lanes, where automated buses will be operating before long. And then finally, the slide that follows, for purposes of defining a baseline technology, the planning of the university district project has referenced the design characteristics of an AV technology from the Netherlands. Slide 85 has a photo of the third generation vehicle that's being developed by a company called To Get There. And that new vehicle design will soon be operating at that Rivian office park system that I described previously outside Rotterdam. They have a partner in the U.S. It's a Houston-based firm called Oceaneering International. This is a firm that's known internationally for its expertise in robotic control systems, and they will team for the supply of AV technology in the United States. The photo also shows Oceaneering manufactures and supplies specialized automated vehicles to move people and materials, such as that photo from an automobile manufacturing facility, and it shows their robot vehicle out in front. By undertaking the pilot project on the campuses of TSU and U of H, we will be able to address a number of research objectives, some of which are shown on slide 86. You can read those on your own. So let me close. The key conclusions that I want to make in this broad overview of automated roadway vehicle technology are going to be given in the context that Houston's regional transportation system, with its increasingly more complicated and congested operating environment, needs to apply technology in a way that will make things better. So here are my conclusions. Starting on slide 88, I'll just go through the numbered conclusions. First, there's a continual effort underway to coordinate the university or the U.S. Department of Transportation policy with the design development efforts of the automotive industry through the SAE standards process. And this will be very important for us to track over the next few years. Second, the process of working through the many technical and policy and regulatory challenges may well take decades of time. Third, it's our long range in our large urban districts. There's the greatest benefit may be realized through deployment of AV technology there in the short term. But by overcoming the challenges of operations and the related investments in infrastructure, we're going to need to start giving immediate attention to strategic planning and engineering activities to bring that technology to use in urban districts. Fourth, the infrastructure challenges which came from gaps in AV technology provisions, will require these strategic actions to address things like paint and signage for machine vision, roadway right-of-way challenges for provisions for drop-off or failed vehicle provisions, installation of new V2I communications equipment, and then the design and installation of other supplemental equipment within the urban fabric to allow the vehicles to know precisely what their location is when GPS signals are not available. Fifth, the University District AV Transit Circulator System project is well suited to provide a living laboratory in which the testing of this technology can be accomplished in a controlled environment before we start to deploy that technology on a much larger scale in our other major urban districts, most of which will have a more complicated operating environment than that initial University District project. And in particular, that University District project will allow us to assess the best approach to designing AV technology applications to do this critical first-mile, last-mile connections to high-capacity transit corridors. And sixth, we will need an integrated multimodal transportation system in Houston by the year 2050, which applies AV technology effectively, starting first at the local residential areas that I've referred to as villages around the perimeter of the region, as well as within the large urban districts to provide convenient and efficient connections to and from high-capacity transit hubs. And as a component of high-capacity transit systems in major corridors, we will also be applying AV transit through automated bus operations, some moving in platoons within our very fine HOV system. And I'm going to close with an illustration on slide 92 that I've taken from the ITS Japan presentation made a couple of years ago at a conference describing the Japan 2050 plan. You can see the small personal AVs that operate out in the villages to bring people to and from a transit hub where they board higher capacity transit. And then they layer in progressively higher capacity technologies, transit technologies, such as advanced automated BRT systems to move large quantities of people in bus platoons and connect them to very high capacity rail systems, then interconnect the surrounding cities and the major employment and activity centers within the urban core of the region. I believe this illustrates very well the type of integrated multimodal transportation system that the Houston region must begin now to plan, design, and build. I would like to thank you for your time. I hope that we can all continue these important conversations about the application of advanced transportation technology and how it will be applied to benefit Houston's future. The last page of the document has my contact information, as well as a couple of websites that you can go to obtain more information about AV transit applications in that NCHRP project I mentioned. Finally, I would like to express my appreciation to Alan Clark and the Houston-Galveston Area Council for inviting me to give this presentation. I have thoroughly enjoyed the experience.